I would like to acknowledge the Quandamooka people, the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast was recorded, and to pay my respects to their elders past, present, and those emerging. I am fortunate to be able to spend much of my lifestyle outside on the land of the longest living storytellers in the world, and I am grateful for their ongoing care and connection to the land and waterways. I do my best to respect the land by treading carefully and acknowledging the beauty when I'm working and playing on country. Jade Fitzgerald has a lot of big energy, and we could have talked for hours. She's a newbie to Wynnum and, of course, loves it and the community. Interestingly, Jade has actually used the podcast to introduce herself to some of the guests. We had a really interesting chat, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Hi, Jay. Nice to meet you. Nice to have you on the podcast.
Hi. Thanks for being here. It's very exciting, actually.
So, as I always ask my podcast guests, what do you love about the Bayside and how did you get here?
Well, what isn't there to love about the Bayside, really?
True.
I mean, who doesn't want to live near the ocean in Australia, let alone in the climate that we've got here in Brisbane? So I guess that's sort of what dragged us and made us fall in love with the area itself when we first came in. We came in sort of 3 years ago. My husband is actually Moroccan, and we'd been living in the Middle East for 7 years. And actually just prior to COVID, we decided to move back to Australia, but I'm from Sydney. So I had an aging grandmother, and we'll go back to Sydney and sort of start a life there. And so we did that, and then COVID hit. And we were like, no. We were living in a two-bedroom apartment where we literally couldn't really even see the sky. Mm. You sort of had to hang out the balcony window and, you know, say, oh, there's blue sky up there. But it was sort of scary as well, you know, big city. And you know, we'd only been there sort of 9 months, and it was all sort of imploding, and no one really knew what was going to happen. And so it was just weird days and weird times. Previously, we'd been looking to sort of buy a place in Sydney, and one day my husband came home. He'd been to Brisbane once before for 4 days to visit my cousins who live up here. I took him to the Ekka. He got to meet some carnies. He got to see some Queensland cows. And at some point, like over those 4 days, we always knew we would probably end up in Queensland at some point in our lifetime. It was, you know, the big open roads. The people are lovely. It's a chilled back lifestyle. It's a nice part of the world, you know? And so we sort of always had that in the back of our head, but it was more like a retirement thing.
It wasn't really long-term goals.
Yeah, it wasn't like, and I guess me being from Sydney, there's this real thing with Sydney and Brisbane people as well. Like, you know, if you had really said to me sort of 10 years ago, you'll end up living in Brisbane, I would have laughed you out of town. But little did I know what I was being stupidly laughing out of town for. Needless to say, we ended up, it was Nadib who sort of said, look, we should start looking at Brisbane. And we did. And we got a buyer's agent to help us look for some properties up here. And, you know, we really didn't have any indication or any loyalties of where we could have wanted
to. No attachment with it.
We've got no. So we've got my cousins who are here in Seven Hills. So that would be a nice sort of base point, but really we were kind of open, which was amazing. And so we got a lot of choices put in front of us, and we had an offer on another house in Cannon Hill when we landed, but our buyer's agent brought us to this property in Wynnum as the first one. And you know, we now know on our street that our house is known. We've got two huge hoop pines out the front. They're over 150 years old. They're heritage listed, and everyone says that they use those hoop pines to know that they're home. You know, like that's our house. You know, we own. And it was just this like moment of, we felt like we'd landed and arrived in our spot. You know, and then when you do the drive down the waterfront, well, like, it was a freezing, blowing day. It was like horrible, but we just fell in love anyway.
We don't get those days very often.
We don't, you know, we don't. Like, it's just, it's magical here. And then I think it was just, well, we don't think, we know it was the best decision we ever made. We had to do 2 weeks in quarantine. It was all a big drama. well, we finally got here. We've got gorgeous neighbours. We do street parties at Christmas and Easter, like we all hang out. It's just lovely and there's such a community here.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're really able to be a part of it and to sort of grow along with it. My husband's a chef, so he opened like the Fat Duck. He was there. Yes, he was one of the first chefs down at Manly Boathouse. You know, so he's sort of been a part of the food community.
Which
here,
is growing as well.
Which is definitely growing. So yeah, so that's how we ended up here. Wow. We called him the only Moroccan in the village.
Well, he would be.
Yes, while the World Cup was on, you may have seen us driving through the streets with the Moroccan flag at 4 o'clock in the morning.
It's kind of
fun. You know, it was a big moment
Take
for
Take it when
them.
You can.
Exactly. Yeah.
So tell me, so 7 years in the Middle East.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was like epic. I was in my early sort of late 30s, early 40s, and needed a bit of a life change. And I had a couple of friends that were living over in Abu Dhabi, which is about an hour and a half from Dubai, where, you know, Sex and the City and all those movies. It's not like that at all, but anyway. And I went over and I visited them and I literally fell in love with it. It is like a tropical resort, next level, five-star, amazing lifestyle. And I decided to apply for jobs. And I, at the time, was I sell alcohol for a living and I was trying to get jobs in the Middle East.
That's a good match.
Everyone was like, Jade, of all people, you'd be the one that would go and do that, that we know. And sure enough, yes, I was. So I ended up working for one of the biggest alcohol providers and sellers in the Middle East over there for 7 years, and I sold more champagne than you'd care to believe. I was the world's number one seller of Veuve Clicquot Rosé for 4 years in a row.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, we used to swim in it. It was great.
Wow. And it's just the way people live over there.
Yeah. So the population only the local population only makes up 15%. The rest is all expats. And, you know, the Middle East, which is, you know, a very big eclectic group of countries within the United Arab Emirates. It's made up of seven emirates, and two of them being Abu Dhabi and Dubai are very open to like a very free lifestyle, I guess. You know, and it's become more and more free over the last sort of even in my time frame living there. Najib had already been living there. He'd been there for a few years and lived in Qatar and a couple of other places as well. But yeah, it's actually nothing like you ever think it is in your head is what's sort of going on there. And it was a beautiful, eye-opening, wonderful experience, you know. Like, and upon reflection, I'd go back and I was like, did I ever go to school with a Muslim? Like, I don't remember. I don't remember learning much about Islam. I didn't. You know, and there the call to prayer is literally played out in the streets five times a day.
It's not hidden behind closed doors.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But they're very welcoming and very open for all religions. So there's a church on one corner and a mosque on another and a synagogue on the other. Like it's this really beautiful mixing and melting pot that's there, but in no uncertain terms, you know, they are Muslim and it's a part of, you know, the world that's there, and you sort of live around it, you know. You don't walk down the street with a tank top and thongs and a VB in your hand.
Yeah.
You know, is that such a bad thing? No. You know, women are in these gorgeous abayas, and like I'd go and get my nails done and I'd be sitting there and they walk in and they flip off their abaya. So that's the black long dress that you normally see. Underneath, they've got board shorts and like a tank top.
Is that right?
They're not wearing anything fancy. They've put on their killer heels and designer sunglasses, and their hair is under a scarf. Mm. So it's this big, messy knot. They haven't even bothered brushing it, but they look a million bucks. And then I kind of look at them going, do we have it all wrong?
Yeah.
You literally pick from one black up.
There's no thought in the
morning. But each to their own. Yeah. It was a fascinating, lovely experience.
7 years is a long time. So you must have liked it.
It went by so fast. Yeah. It went by so fast.
And did the same job the whole time?
I did, for the same company and the same job the whole time. And, yeah, I absolutely loved it. It was one, a very brave thing and crazy thing to do. And for years I still had, like, all my stuff in a storage thing in Sydney because I was like, well, if it doesn't work out, you know, I've got to be able to pack up and leave because I was single when I moved there. Yeah. But I met Najib 6 months after arriving.
Oh, was that early?
Yes. After a few beverages in a swimming pool. That's a whole other story.
The rose
over. There was a lot of that. That's a whole other story. But, yeah, and then so that was that. I got married under Sharia law there to Najib. And that was funny into itself. We were like, I will just, you know, go and do the paperwork. You know, little did I know it was all in Arabic and, you know, like.
So you got married. You didn't come back to Australia.
No, we got married there.
Yep.
Australia is really hard with visas and entrance and all that kind of stuff. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for immigration policies and us making sure that we have the right people coming to Australia, and I'm all for that. But, boy, we take a long time with it, and it is a very expensive exercise. And places like the Middle East, they've already done all of the background. You can't go and just live there. You have to be sponsored by your employer. Your employer does all the background checks. You have to provide, you know, police paperwork and all that kind of stuff. And so it's just sort of this weird system that we have here where you have to go through everything again. And, you know, we decided we were getting married and that was that. I wasn't one of those ones that was ever going to have a big white fufu dress and wedding, so we just got on with it. We came back to Sydney and had a big ring ceremony and big party. And we've never done anything in Morocco, and his mum to this day says, when are we having the wedding, you know?
So they're still in Morocco. 8 years
later. Yeah. So his mum and his family kind of live in Morocco, but he's got a brother in New York and one in Italy as well.
Oh, there's nice holiday destinations, aren't they?
So we get around a bit for those ones.
Not bad at all. Yeah. So had he lived in Australia before?
No.
Oh, so he brought him straight back to Sydney?
Yes. No, we'd come on a couple of holidays.
And the 4 days in Brisbane.
You know, 4 days in Brisbane. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, like, obviously, he loves Australia. Who do? There's not much not to love.
Absolutely.
But, yes, he's moved himself a long way culturally from everything that he sort of knows and is familiar with. And, you know, it's interesting. I think Sydney is a really big melting pot, and he had sort of friends that were living there that had been in the Middle East or were Moroccan as well. And we haven't really found that here as such. You know, we can't find any Moroccans at all, ever, anywhere. But there's a very small population of Moroccans in Australia anyway. Yeah. So we get that. But then even, you know, Ramadan, which happens every year, where they fast for the whole month of Ramadan. You know, he's done two or three here now in Queensland, and we just can't find a community really to celebrate when they, you know, they break their fast. It's called iftar in the evening. And we can't sort of find the celebration and the places to go.
So that's what happens, because I'm not overly haven't got a lot of information about that. I haven't experienced it myself. So they fast and then there's a big celebration at the end and people come all together.
Well, so that's Eid. Ramadan is every year for 30 days. Yep. So Muslims around the world, it's the same time.
No matter where you are,
all day and so from sun up till sundown. And please, I am not Muslim, so I don't profess to know everything or speak for all Muslims either. But essentially, there's no food or water, which most people don't know. They don't drink water either. From sun up to sundown. And then at sundown, they break their fast with what they call iftar, which is a word for kind of breakfast, I guess. And so you have every day, table every full day. Of food. It's exhausting, don't get me wrong. And you kind of, like for my husband, for instance, you have everything on the table at once. So there'll be sweets, cakes, soup, hot food, salad, pasta, you know, you name it, because who knows what he feels like breaking his fast with. Yeah. He's not eaten all day.
Yeah.
But without fail, they break their fast with a date normally because it settles your stomach and it's got...
Before you start eating something else.
Yeah, yeah. So, and like all this stuff I didn't know before I moved to the Middle East either. Like this has all been a massive learning curve. And, you know, there's... We were just watching on ABC, there's a fantastic show... it'll come to me, but the principal of the Islamic Brisbane School or College has just done within Brisbane. He took six of his kids from their school and three other schools in Brisbane and put them together. And I think it's called The Swap. Fascinating. Worth watching. Okay. Good for a giggle, a few tears. Yep. And you're like, the population is here, but it can be very insular and, you know, Najib's very free. Moroccans are different. 99% of Moroccan population is Muslim, but they're all very different in how they all practice and what they do and don't do. And
So you had to go all the way to Sydney to have that celebration. So then every day there was a community around.
Yeah, so in Sydney it's mad. In Sydney, in Lakemba, that's where the majority of the Muslim community sort of lives there. And then so for years they've had this street festival for Ramadan and it's open till 3 o'clock in the morning. And so all the shops there, they all go out in the street and they've all got their food and there's music and all that kind of stuff. So amazing. But I think because of COVID and this new fascinating platform called TikTok, this street festival is now like mega. They were, I mean, you couldn't move. It was heaving from sundown till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Every day
for a month. So, yes, we decided, Najib was like, come on, let's go down and have a look. And I was like, sure. And we've got a little French bulldog, which is his actual one true love, if I'm honest. and so it was coming with us, so we drove. And, yeah, but we went and it was amazing. Aww. And we were there the night before Ramadan finished, so it's a special evening anyway. And there were, I'd say, 1,000 people. They do a special prayer on this day. There was 1,000 people at least in the street praying. And then the rest of us all being able to be sort of a part of it and privileged enough to be involved. And we all had our cups of tea and ate food. And, yeah, it was crazy. It was great. It was amazing.
What fun.
Yeah.
So you're going to do that again next year?
I would say this will be a yearly event for us now and we'll just plan around it. But Ramadan moves every year. God, please, if we hear this thing and I get this wrong, I believe it's like 15 days it moves forward every year.
Oh, okay.
So at some point it's going to fall over Christmas.
Yes, yeah.
Najib has to go back to Morocco. Jade will not do Christmas. That's new. But for like the last 3 years it's fallen on my birthday.
Oh.
Not this year. So it moves every year. So
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. There's lots. And it's actually, you know, like unfortunately it's a religion that's had a bit of bad rap for a few bad eggs, but there's a lot of beauty. And, you know, the way I look at religion is I think all of them genuinely have, you know, they come from a place of goodness and kindness and community and, you know, doing the right thing and being good, beautiful people. So whatever path you walk with that, you know, go forth with grace.
It's still an individual path, isn't
100%. It? 100%. Yeah. You know, it's not my faith, but my husband and I can appreciate his faith and want him to be able to, you know, maintain that and keep that. It's a part of his core being. You know, and for his family as well, I'm 11 years older than him. and, you know, I sell alcohol for a living when I meet them. And I'm like, oh, this is going to go well. But they were so welcoming and so lovely and so open-armed. And, you know, Najib and I have now got property and things in Morocco. And, you know, we love to be able to go backwards and forwards and, you know, share, I guess, between the cultures.
Yeah.
I can never get in an argument with his family because I can't speak the language. So there's never a problem, which is fabulous.
Everyone wins.
So everyone just thinks I'm fabulous all the time. I can be yelling at him and swearing at him and smiling.
Are there any challenges? Have you faced any challenges?
Yeah, look, you know, I think we, particularly as Australians, you don't realise until you travel how actually lucky we are and how privileged we are as not only being from a well-off country in the world of things, but we've actually, like, our passport is a golden passport. Never do we ever have to think, oh, can I get into that country? Will that country let me in? You know, do I have to apply? Can I come in? So, you know, Najib and I have had our, I mean, woe is me, it's travelling issues mostly, but it is, you know, and I do think it's hard for him. You know, we can't go to certain countries. Like, there was moments there we wouldn't ever go to Turkey because it was the gateway for ISIS. But even though he's got nothing to do with it, just having the stamp in your passport was not worth it. Yeah. So we never did, you know. Yeah. We have now.
And you would never have seen it.
I would be before. Like, what are you even talking about? Yeah. Like, you know, there was, we had a trip planned to France. We applied for the Schengen visa. He got rejected. Like, no rhyme or reason. No, like, you know, we're all living in the Middle East. We're all good jobs again, you know, like, it's not like there's a bias. And, you know, whether you like to call it racism or not, it essentially is. Mm. And it's quite hardcore and it's definitely there. And, you know, as a, you know, white lady from Australia with a golden passport, no, I'd never sort of experience these things. And, yeah, it does. It makes you think and, you know, what's out there. He does get to become an Australian in a few months' time. We've been living here long enough. And, yeah, so that's really exciting. And he's so excited to become an Australian have his dual citizenship. Yeah. And, you know, like, it'll be really exciting. His mum's really proud of him. And, you know, he's got a brother who lives in America and another one who lives between France and Italy. And, you know, they're a very multicultural family. And, yeah, it's great, really. It's exciting. Yeah,
and it's a nice country to have citizenship with, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You know, I love going over there. Like, the first time I went there, I was like a deer in the headlights. I'd never seen so many people in all my life
in one place.
Like, honestly, I was like, you'd go past beaches and you couldn't see a grain of sand. You think Bondi's busy in, you know, summertime. No Australian goes to Bondi, let's be honest. But... like, it was like that, but like tenfold, and there were just people everywhere, and I just couldn't fathom it. And the levels of wealth to poverty, we, you know, we have those issues in Australia, but not to those degrees.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have people sort of living in houses that they've built themselves on the side of the road, and then right next door, these mansions, sort of, you know.
Right in your face.
Yeah. So it's that's very culturally really different. And they've got amazing food, let's be honest. Amazing food.
And what do you do now?
So now I have become a buyer's agent. I went through a little bit of a, I want to call it a midlife crisis in many ways. So a couple of years ago, I was selling booze still here in Brisbane. I got another job, obviously, when I came back to Australia with great company. And I was earning good money and stuff, but honestly, it wasn't fulfilling me on a personal level or, you know, just on a, like, filling my soul with any joy. I mean, I've got past the point of, like, you know, at the end of the day, the whole objective of an alcohol salesperson is to sell more alcohol to people, and it just doesn't bring me any love or joy anymore. So leave it at that. So I was like, right, what will I do? And everyone, I've always loved real estate. I really have. And, like, not only do I watch and look at every program that's ever on, listen to every podcast, I'll literally stop us as we're going somewhere and go, oh, that house has got an open home. That looks nice. Let's just go have a look. Drive everyone crazy. But Najib, awesome as he is, he'd be like, oh, okay, let's go have a look. And I'm like, great. So everyone's like, why don't you look at getting into real estate? And so I did my real estate course, and sales side of things, I just couldn't see myself doing it. Mm. I did a couple of interviews with some real estate agents and it just wasn't filling me with joy either. But I had really enjoyed the experience of having a buyer's agent purchase our property. And I was like, well, why don't I kind of do that? And then I kind of feel like the whole game is a little bit rigged. Well, it's not a little bit, it's definitely rigged against the buyer. And there's not enough people out there advocating for buyers.
Mm.
And so the more I kind of looked into it, and then I applied for a job, and a really great woman who's had a very long-standing business gave me a crack. And she gave me a leg up and I just got into it and I just love it. Like, it's not even like a little bit of love. I love what I do. I sped through her pipeline that she had of people waiting. I think the fastest purchase I've ever made is 12 hours. Sign up. Gosh. Hi, how are you going? Yeah. What are you looking for? Okay, 12 hours later I've bought for you. Yeah. That's an investment property, obviously. Mm. But even just like the diversity of what I can buy, who you're dealing with, I still have these amazing connections with people, whether it's you're buying them a property for as an investment property or you're buying them a home for them to go and live in or first homeowners to start their family.
Must be some joy in that.
Some. Yeah. It's like, it's mega.
Yeah.
You know, like every single time you get to settlement day, like there's always tears and you go and take crazy photos and stuff. And, but you're like, you've given people a leg up and you've helped them secure something really amazing in their life.
For the future too.
For you know. And so I feel really privileged and honoured to be a part of the process. Yes, I get paid for it, obviously. You know, I'm not doing it for fun. But I think there's worse things in the world to be doing. And I just feel really lucky that I've found what brings me joy. And I think I'm giving people a really great experience through their buying journey as well, if that makes sense.
And it must just give you, in terms of the joy, but it's that sense of purpose is so, it must be every day different compared to, you know, you probably enjoyed, and probably for a lot of years you enjoyed what you did before. You
loved
probably
it.
Connected with people and, you know, that's probably, I get loved the sense, it's what you really love. Yeah. But this is just a whole new level of that purpose.
And, you know, like I don't, like lots of people, I tell people that choosing a buyer's agent is a very personal experience as well. And you've got to make sure that you both gel with each other. I won't just take any client. And I also tell my clients to make sure that they've interviewed a couple of people because you're really jumping into someone's life, even if it's an investment property. And these people may never see the property in their lifetime. They've got to trust you that you're making the right decisions, not only with, you know, your data and your information that you've got, but you as a person. I think you say things like, it's all about the vibe. If you get out of the car and the street, and I'm like, it's all about the vibe. And they're like, okay. Some people this gels with. Yeah. Some people it's not. Yep. They're very analytical and clinical.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, so it's not one of those things.
Attached
no.
To yeah. So what do you do? What do you do? I've never had a buyer's agent.
Yeah. So, like, essentially I become the person that's buying the property but without any emotional involvement. So say you came to me and you're like, Jade, right, we're looking to downsize our property and I'll take all the information from you that ticks all your boxes, like what do you need from the place, what size, where are you looking? I'll take one of my beautiful clients that I'm working for at the moment. She's a single lady. She's got a great budget. She wanted to stay very in a very small circle of where her life is currently. And so she gave me all of her information. And so I'll start looking there, but then I start looking a little bit outside as well because I know she can get a bit more bang for her buck in those suburbs. It's then a matter of kind of introducing that to your client and going, if you just have a look here, you might, you can get this. But it can be really challenging sometimes to get people to think outside their bubble or their box. And, you know, for various reasons as well. But when they realize and when you understand that you've got someone on your team that is 100% only working for you.
Yeah.
only has your best interests.
You're not in cahoots with an agent.
Never. Yep. There's no, the only person that pays me is my client.
Yeah.
And so you like it, great. If you don't like it, no worries, move on. Like it's not even, it's got nothing, no emotional attachment for me at all, except for end goal, best outcome for my client. And so subsequently we are now, you know, she was like, I was really going to have a word to you. I was so, you know, that first week you sent me all these great places and I went and looked them. Then you sent me a couple that were outside of where I was looking. And now she's not even looking where she used to want to live. We're only looking in the new suburb because there is more bang for your buck. And I'll do things like go, it's 10 minutes from, I'll do a whole map thing of where they were and where their places are that they live. I'll go and pull up on the street and go to cafes, dog parks. I talk to people that are in the building.
Oh, really?
I'll sort
to
of
get
really
a real sense of what 100%. The community is like as well.
Yep. And then when it generally then gets to like, so weekends or open days, mostly because I'm a buyer's agent, I can get private viewings from real estate agents, which is brilliant. And then other times we'll go on a Saturday even together, we'll go and look at properties or I go and look at them and then I'll only show you if I think it's worth your time because lots of people are really busy.
They just don't have
capacity. And so who wants to go traipsing around on a weekend looking at property? Other than buyer's agents. Some days I go just for fun. Like there'll be a property that'll come up and I'll be like, okay, I have absolutely no one that's ever going to buy this, but I'm going to go look. I go look. But, yeah, it's good. I look, it gives, I think it gives purpose to not only my job but my day and I love it. You know, having your own business is, you know, and, you know, being in your late 40s and deciding to do a full career change and, you know, my husband's been amazingly supportive for me to do it and, you know, I'm anywhere near my old earning capacity, but I am 100% happier than where I was. And I think it comes down to more that than anything else, to be honest.
It's worth a lot more.
It is. It's worth everything.
Yeah.
So it's been a big jump, but it's been a great jump.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. And you do sort of do it for all over Brisbane? Or?
You do, yeah, because you can never, which I also love because no 2 days are the same. You know, my last couple of clients I was purchasing for, one is moving up from New South Wales. They have a rather large family but not a hugely massive budget, and they have a grown-up autistic son. And so the biggest thing for me was to find them a property that had an outdoor living facility, like a granny flat or something like that for the son for their lifetime. So I ended up getting them an absolutely cracking property in Deception Bay. And, you know, some people you go, oh, Deception Bay, Stab City. I'm like, seriously, go have a drive around. Like any suburb, there's some streets that are pockets of, but then the rest of it's amazing. And then like 2 weeks after we purchased, realestate.com just did this massive article on Deception Bay and how it was going to be like the boom suburb for Brisbane. And I was like, yes.
Saw that coming.
Well, I did it, but because, and maybe I was talking with another client the other day, maybe because I'm not from Brisbane. I don't have any preconceived conception of what a suburb is.
Yeah.
Or is like, or was like, or, you know, Wynnum sort
of. It is a big bonus.
You know, like,
And you so don't have that judgment that goes with it. Yeah.
And do I do, you do a lot of back end work before you're purchasing anyway, like all of the data and statistics around what a suburb is like, what school catchments for families, for instance, like what's the capital growth, what's the area doing? So all of those things you sort of do beforehand, before choosing suburbs to look at anyway. But then for me, it's going out and driving around and having, you know, as I say, a coffee or a beer or whatever, and you do get a really good sense and a feel for place. But because I don't have that, this is, you know, it's all open and I don't get to choose where people want to live. So I can be one day in Deception Bay, another day I'm in, you know, town buying an apartment in West End, and, you know, I've bought all over Logan, Ipswich for investment properties. I'll go anywhere.
Yeah.
And I, you know, because I've spent so many years in the car driving with my old jobs, for me, I love it. It's all same, but different.
Yeah, and you're seeing new places too because you haven't been here. Constantly. So it's all new.
Every quarter I turn a lot.
Yeah.
Mind you, weirdly, I have now managed to buy, not once, but twice, a house on the same street.
In a couple of years.
Right? Is that not weird? I think that's weird. Like of all the towns in all the houses, all the streets. But they're nice streets, so what can you say?
Yeah. Oh, well done.
So, yeah, it's fun.
Oh, I know. Well, I'd love to keep chatting.
Me too. Happy to do it again anytime. Always on for a chat.
We'll have to have a part two or something.
Maybe.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate
your
time.
And thank you for what you're doing. I know when we first started I did say thank you, but it does allow for a sense of community with the Wynnum women. And it's been a joy to listen to and now to be a part of. So thank you for having me on.
Lovely. That's really nice. Thank you.
Thanks.